Chapter 6. My mother was sitting in the living room with Officer Ramirez when I walked in. I wasn't in the mood to see either one of them. "Where were you?" Mom asked me as soon as I walked in. She got up and stood in front of me. "You stink. What were you doing?" Her questions came as fast as punches. I knew what she said was true. I smelled like beer and smoke. "Nowhere, Mom." "Don't tell me nowhere. I got a message from your school today. They said you were absent." I could see that Mom was upset. She was working hard to stay calm, probably because of Officer Ramirez. "Now where were you?"
"Calm down, Ma," I said, ignoring her question and looking at the cop. "Did you bring him here to yell at me?"
"No, Martin," Officer Ramirez said. "I brought your mother home from work, and I thought I'd just check in with you. From the looks of things, you could use some help." "I don't need your help." All his help ever brought was bad news. "We don't know who the killer was. Maybe you should move to a new neighborhood. Go to a new school." "Martin, I'm going to ask you this one more time. Where were you today?" The room got quiet, and I looked at them both. Even Officer Ramirez looked serious. "I went to visit Güero, Mom," I admitted. "After that, I went to see Frankie. I'll go to school tomorrow," I said before turning to my room. No one said anything when I shut my bedroom door. Thursday, I made it to English class on time. I'm not saying I did it for my mom or Mr. Mitchell or anyone. I just did it. Don't ask me why. Mr. Mitchell was standing by the door ready to close it as soon as the bell rang. "We missed you yesterday, Martin. Everything all right?" he asked. "Yeah, why? You see something wrong?" I said. He looked almost hurt, but I didn't care. He was just too nosy. "Let's reschedule that detention for this afternoon," he replied as I quickly passed him. Vicky was at her seat when I went to my desk, but was fishing something out of her backpack when I passed her. "You coming to the big game Saturday, Mr. Mitchell?" Steve asked as he walked in. "Actually, I'll be here, Steve. I'm handling Saturday detentions. Maybe I'll check out the game," said Mr. Mitchell. "Samora's going down, Mr. Mitchell. You should come out and see me score," he replied, turning to me. I made a snorting sound at Steve, just to get on his nerves. I never cared about Samora's football team, although I have to admit it would be nice to see Samora win. Vicky shook her head and wrote something in her notebook. Nearby, I heard Teresa sigh. "That girl has no time for me." Mr. Mitchell started class with a discussion of an old story called Beowulf that the class had started reading the day before. I had no idea what he was talking about. Something about a monster in the woods that had all these people scared until someone was brave enough to stop it. I never heard of the story, but it kind of sounded like my neighborhood. Always something lurking around, taking out kids. Toward the end of class, Mitchell brought the discussion back to heroes. "For the last 10 minutes of class, I want you to team up with a partner or two and look at the paragraphs you wrote for homework. Follow the steps we discussed yesterday to give helpful suggestions to your partner. Final drafts are due tomorrow." All around me, students moaned, and I leaned back in my chair. I hate when teachers make you share your work. It's like having people spy on you when you're in the shower. The only good thing was that I sat in the back row. I was sure none of the students there did their work. I turned to my right and saw that kid, Roiland, looking at me. He was the only other kid in the back row, and he had this dumb smile on his face that told me he hadn't even opened his book. Good. At least I wasn't the only one. "Martin, why don't you team up with Vicky and Teresa? Roland, you work with Steve and Darcy," Mr. Mitchell said. Teresa's face scrunched up like she just smelled Frankie's boots. It was almost funny. "Are you sure I gotta have him in my group?" Steve said about Roland. "Well, you could always join me Saturday instead of playing in that big game." I laughed out loud along with several other students. "Morris, if your head gets any bigger, it ain't gonna fit in your helmet," Roiland cut back. "Gentlemen, enough. You're on the same team. Figure out how to work together. That's more important than football or English," Mr. Mitchell said. I had to give the teacher some credit. His comments shut them up. I got out of my desk and sat next to Vicky. She was jotting something into one of those planner notebooks. None of my friends would ever buy such a thing. Her handwriting was so tiny, I couldn't read it, but I could see that it was perfectly straight and even, unlike mine.
"I can't read that chicken scratch," my English teacher said last year. "I got a C minus in the class and didn't worry about it, as long as I passed."
Vicky seemed the opposite of the girls who I hung out with back home. Her face was so intense. It was like she had 10 things racing through her mind, all of them related to school. Luisa, the last girl I dated, would have laughed at someone like Vicky. Even if Luisa had 10 things in her head, school would be number 11. I'm not dogging her, though, because I was no better. Teresa slid her desk toward us. It made a loud groaning sound as she nudged it forward a few inches at a time. As she approached, she looked at me like I was a dentist who was about to pull out her tooth. I leaned back and waited. "Let me just say that what I wrote was bad," Vicky said, grabbing another notebook and flipping to the pages she wanted to show us. "You always say that, Vic, but you know it's not true," Teresa said. "I don't think I did the assignment right, and I didn't get to finish," I said. The idea of showing them what I wrote about Güero bothered me. Teresa stared at Vicky as if I wasn't there. "See, I told you he was stupid," her look said. "Let's just exchange and do what Mr. Mitchell said, just helpful suggestions." "Whatever," Teresa said. We switched notebooks. Teresa got mine, Vicky got Teresa's, and I got Vicky's. When she handed it to me, she smiled. Her long hair was pulled back, and she looked so nice I got a little nervous. Don't laugh at me. It's true. Her paragraph was about her grandmother who came from Mexico without an education. When she arrived in the U.S., she couldn't even read, but she managed to go to night school, graduate from college, and become a teacher. In the two-page paper, Vicky said her grandmother inspired her to work hard and value education. Now she's hoping to be a teacher, too. "This is good, Vicky," I said, putting her notebook down. "You should read it to your grandmother. It would make her proud." "I can't," she said with a look I won't forget. "She died 2 years ago." I felt like kicking myself. It wasn't the first time I said something stupid, but it felt like it. "I'm sorry," I said, trying to think of the right words to say. My tongue was suddenly a tangled knot. "It's okay, Martin," she said, turning to Teresa and offering her a few writing suggestions. My turn was next, and Teresa began by shaking her head and frowning. "I don't think what you wrote is what Mr. Mitchell wanted. It's not long enough either," she said. "But I guess it's okay." Teresa spoke the last word as if it was especially difficult. "Thanks, Teresa," I said, wanting to tell her off, but Vicky was there. Instead, I gave her a big fake smile. "That's really helpful." "Okay, let's switch again," Vicky instructed. This time I got Teresa's paper and Vicky got mine. My stomach was flipping while Vicky was reading my short paragraph about Güero. I was afraid she'd think I was dumb or something, but what could I do? I wasn't a writer. After several long seconds, she brushed her hair back and looked at me. "I don't know what to say," she said. Teresa yawned. "I know, I didn't do the assignment right." "No, Martin, what you wrote is so deep. But I don't understand. You need to finish it. You need to explain what happened to your brother." "Someone shot and killed him." I spoke the words in the same way I would tell you my favorite color, the day I was born, the name of Frankie's sister. Sitting in front of Teresa and Vicky with the whole class nearby, I wasn't going to lose it. "I'm so sorry," she said. "It's okay, Vicky," I told her. Yet I could feel the movement inside, like the little earthquakes we get around here from time to time. Not enough to hurt anyone, just enough to let you know something is happening. She looked at me with those brown eyes, and I could see sadness in them for me. I felt naked like a newborn baby. It might sound silly to say that when you have a pretty girl in front of you, but it wasn't like she was seeing my body without clothes on. It was like she was looking at my insides, like I had no skin. I almost freaked. "Your paper was great, Vicky," Teresa said, shattering the moment instantly. I was glad she did. "I wouldn't change a thing." "Yours was nice too, Teresa. Really nice," I said, giving her exactly what she gave to me. Truth is, I didn't read a word of Teresa's paper. It could have been about the planet Mars for all I cared. My mind was on Vicky. It took me all day to calm down from English class. I couldn't shake the feeling Vicky gave me. I wanted to talk to her, but I had no idea what I would say. I used to think I was pretty smooth around girls, but not with her. In gym class, Mr. Dooling continued his unit on basketball, and again I found myself on the court. This time I had to play a little bit. "Come on, Luna, get in the game," Mr. Dooling yelled when he spotted me on the sidelines. Next thing I knew, I was on the court dribbling the ball. As soon as I got near our opponent's basket, I passed the ball to one of my teammates who dribbled 3 steps, drawing the defenders away from me. Then he passed it right back. "Shoot it," he yelled. I was about as far from the basket as the foul line, but I was off to the side. It looked to be a pretty easy jump shot, even for me. I planted my feet, raised the ball, brought up my arms, and went to shoot. Just as I was about to let the ball go, I saw a blur through the corner of my eye. A split second later, Wind rushed by me the way it does when a car passes you on the street. The ball, which had been on the tips of my fingers, was knocked loose from my hands. "Rejected!" someone cheered. "What happened?" I said, turning around. Behind me, I could see someone zigzagging down the court with the ball. He stopped briefly at midcourt to dribble behind his back and through his legs, just to show off. The guy was fast, and he was bigger than most of the kids in the gym. I knew right away who blocked my shot. It was Steve Morris. "Morris, give back that ball and get off the court until it's your turn to play," Mr. Dooling yelled. "He smoked you, man," said a voice on the other side of me. I looked to see Clarence standing there. That stupid smile was on his face. Many people in the gym who knew Steve were laughing. Other kids, including Eric, were watching me. Many had that hungry look people get when there's gonna be a fight, but none of them knew me, so they didn't know how I'd react. If Frankie was there, he could have told them what was gonna happen. You probably already know by now. I started walking down the other end of the court towards Steve. He was still showboating. "Don't do it, Martin," said Eric from behind me. There was no stopping me. I had to do something. I just didn't know exactly what. "Morris, give that ball back," Mr. Dooling said. It sounded to me like he was begging. "Just one shot, Mr. Dooling," answered Steve. "Slam it, Steve," Clarence chanted. "Dunk it." I can't stand that kid. Steve glanced up at the basket and began to dribble toward it slowly, setting his steps right so he could dunk it. I couldn't let that happen, not on me. I picked up my pace toward Steve. His back was still to me while he worked to set up his shot. I knew he had no clue where I was. Suddenly he started jogging to the basket. If I was going to stop him, I'd have to move quick. I broke into a full sprint. It was a race against time, but I was faster because I didn't have to deal with the ball. Steve took two big steps, following a curved path that would lead to the right side of the basket. I charged straight in, making my trip shorter. We were like two meteors streaking to the same point. Just as he took his third step and was about to jump up, I crossed his path. His arms were on their way up, but I came crashing down on the ball, knocking it free from his hands. It bounced hard off his leg and hopped back into the court. I flew out of bounds and nearly smashed into the cinder block wall of the gym. "Man, what are you trying to do?" said Steve as I steadied myself. "Trying? Holmes, I just did it." I raised my hands over my head and looked back at my class. Instantly, the whole place erupted into hoots. It seemed like everyone, even the other gym teachers, stopped to see what was happening. I would have stopped too. It's not every day the star running back of the football team gets shown up by a kid like me. "All right, that's enough, you two," Mr. Dooling said from somewhere behind me. I walked back to my classmates without another word. I had nothing else to say. But Steve wasn't done.